Hey, Chad, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah.
How about...
No, not again.
Okay, what about...
I just saw that last week.
Okay, oh, I got it.
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So, what did you think of House?
It was very spooky, except when it wasn't.
Exactly, that was the point. Welcome, 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 fine listeners, to another edition of You Want Me to Watch What? Where Chad and I challenge, suggest movies that the other hasn't seen, and then we watch it and discuss it. And with this month's installment, with this week's installment being so close to Halloween, I thought we would choose a haunted house movie.
It's honestly, it's only like the third haunted house movie that I've seen. So there's that.
Well, there's that. So this time around,
fourth haunted house movie I've seen. I forgot Monster House.
That does count. That does count. So this time around, we're discussing 1986's House.
Boo.
Yeah. Starring William Catt from The Greatest American Hero, George mm-hmm. Wendt from Cheers, and Richard Mull from Night Court. It's a star-studded TV cast in a feature film.
And it feels like it.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes. So the movie starts off with Uber Eats Beta.
Oh, yeah.
With a grocery store delivery guy showing up to this Victorian style house, and he knocks on the door. He's delivering for the person who lives there, and there's no answer, but the door's open. So he goes in and he's hollering around and he winds his way upstairs only to find the resident, an elderly lady, has hung herself in her bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that it's the aunt of one Roger Cobb, renowned author and troubled man. Through a series of flashbacks, we find out that his son just disappeared.
Yep.
They were at this house visiting his grandma. At the house he grew up in. And his one minute his son was there, and the next, gone. He thought he saw him in the swimming pool, so he dived in, but there was nobody there. The police, the FBI, the CIA, they're all stymied, and they're all tired of hearing from him. It's put a strain on the relationship, and he and his wife are now divorced. They never really give an exact time frame of how long the kid's been missing, but you get the sense it's been just long enough for everybody to... kind of part ways.
Everybody has, if not moved on, moved on.
Yes. So, and we also find out that he is a Vietnam vet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, this is circa 1986, so that's still plausible in terms of age and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he is having trouble writing his next big book. His publisher is hounding him for it, his manager is hounding him for it, and the book he's currently writing on is based on his experiences in the war. So after the funeral, he finds out that the house has been left to him, and rather than sell it, he's going to move into it. Maybe it'll give him creative inspiration. I don't know. He starts having a series of really bad nightmares involving his time in Vietnam, also including a guy by the name of Big Ben.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Richard
one
Mull.
Of his, yeah, Richard Mull, one of his compatriots in the war. Not a very nice guy.
Mm-mm.
So, as things move on, things in the house start happening. Strange things in the house start happening. A dead swordfish that's been mounted on the wall forever comes to life and starts thrashing around. Tools come to life and try to kill him. There's a monster in the upstairs closet. Things in the house are not right. His next door neighbor, Harold, thinks he's a bit crazy. and is trying to help him while also trying to, dude, calm down. As the plot goes along, he realizes that the house took his son.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows where his son is, in the bathroom mirror. So he breaks the bathroom mirror, goes into this other dimension, rescues his son from what is effectively a Vietnam War prison camp from the spirit of Big Ben, gets back to the house, only for Big Ben to follow, and Roger is able to defeat him by getting over his fears. He defeats Big Ben, he saves the day, the house is on fire, and it's left on an uplifting note. The child is saved, and the husband and wife look like they're going to reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
That is House in a Nutshell. So, what'd you think?
So, so this movie is... I'm going to put on my random movie hat for just a little bit. And kind
go
of,
for it.
Kind of some of the history of things and kind, what I saw when I was watching. So, 1986, 85, 86, somewhere...
85, 86, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, this is part of a subgenre of films that was that were made in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s that focused on Vietnam and specifically the post-traumatic stress disorders of the soldiers who fought in Vietnam as the triggering element of what was going on. First Blood, same thing. You know, the Rambo movies.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these things. And so... It was a brave choice to do that in a horror comedy. So it works and it doesn't. It works because most of the Vietnam stuff is played pretty straight.
You know, yes.
It's when it's in the current time that things are a little bit funky. So that I was really down with. I understood. Two, I don't know. I assume this had the same director all the way through. I don't know if it had the same writer all the way through, but I got a very Donner Lester vibe.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because there are points of it that are very serious and very suspenseful. And then suddenly there's flying garden implements that are trying to, you know, cut them up.
Yeah, it had the same director all the way through.
Okay.
But the story was written by one person and adapted to a screenplay by another person.
All right.
So you have story, screenplay, director, all three different people trying to make one cohesive thing.
And for the most part, it works. But there are certain tonal changes that are just like, I think I see where they're going for. But either it, you know, did the old agent, you know, missed it by that much.
Not much. Kids, go ask your parents.
Yes. Go ask your parents. And then, you know, I don't know, watch other things. But it really seemed to work overall as a film. And that was good because having those tonal changes, I would guess, because this was Miner, right? He was the director, Steve Miner.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think this was his first time trying to do comedy. And so you see how the horror elements are very polished for the most part, and the comedy pieces are a little bit less so. They feel awkward. That what the kids today call cringe. It's not a cringe comedy. It's just it's kind of out of place. Like with Wen's character, you know, right? That's his name, George Wen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the actor's name. Yeah.
You know, his character, who is this horror book lover. He loves this guy, this author, and then he's watching this our main character just sink into this really weird spiral of being nuts. And so, but when they try to talk and he's just very standoffish and aloof and, you know, like he's concerned for his own safety, you know, outweighing and out-talling the guy by about, you know, 6 inches and 50 pounds.
Yeah.
So that part all works. And it's sometimes a little jarring, but for the most part, it works. And I like that. I like the music.
Oh, God, yes.
The music of this. And I'm not talking about the weird, like, you know, covers of Feeling Better Now That We're Through. You know.
You're no good, you're no good.
Yeah. Those are weird. I'm talking about the kind of the incidental music, the stuff that Manfredini wrote, because he's the guy who also wrote the music for the Friday the 13th movies. And you can
I was going to go ahead and finish your thought.
And so you can hear how he builds the suspense in the music, and it really makes the movie sometimes work. It works to the movie's benefit, because you'll hear the suspenseful music that, for somebody who's watched the Friday the 13th movies, you're like, oh, something's about to happen. And then what happens is a joke instead of something scary.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they'll shut the bathroom mirror and you're just certain that there's going to be something in the mirror, but there's not.
But there's not, yeah. what I was going to say is Steve Miner actually directed Friday the 13th parts 2 and 3.
Okay. This makes sense
House,
to me.
House is like his third directorial credit.
And probably kind of a transitional one. Now, I also noticed Kane Hodder showed up in the credits as the stunt coordinator. So he actually played Jason Voorhees in like 4 of the movies.
Oh, nice.
There's a lot of those things, and it's like, okay, I can see where Steve Miner was coming from with all these things. So that all being said, that all works, and I like it. So here's the scene that I bought into the movie on. All right?
All right.
Because it's a little thing, and it's a weird thing. So Roger shows up to his aunt's house, and he's like, okay, I've decided I'm not going to sell it. And there's the realtor being played by the Mater D dude from Ghostbusters, who doesn't want to pay for the Slimer busting.
Yes.
You know? And they're talking, and they're going into the garage, and the realtor picks up a spear gun, and while they're talking, he shoots it. And the spear impacts into a post 6 inches away from Roger's head.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like beat. And then the scene just goes on and they completely ignore it. Completely ignore that this guy almost died by a spear to the face. As in all that PTSD that they're referencing and going to reference over the next 90 minutes just doesn't exist. Or that a guy who is a realtor just about killed his customer or client. And so that's when I bought in, because I'm like, oh, I get it. The real world isn't actually dangerous in this one. You know, Vietnam's over, so the real world is not dangerous anymore. It's only the fantasy supernatural stuff. I get it. I'm on board. Let's do it. Let's play. That, and at the very end when Richard Mole's character comes back as the ghost skeleton thing, and he runs out of bullets, and he's like, damn, come back from the grave and ram out of ammunition.
Ammunition.
It's like, what? Say what?
Yep.
So, movie's good. Movie's weird, right?
Yeah.
And I looked up numbers 2 and 3, and I don't want to watch them. I do want to watch number 4, though.
See, what's funny is, I only knew of 1 and 2. I didn't know there was a 3 and 4 until I was pulling up research for this episode. I'm like, no.
So number 4 comes back to Roger.
I saw that.
Although number two does have Cliff in it. So now we have Norm in this one. It has Cliff in the next one.
Now, I have House 2, the second story. And it leans more into the comedy aspect than anything. And I think you would enjoy it as a comedy with haunted house elements. And I recommend you watch it. I'm not going to make you watch it for this. But someday, you should watch it.
Well,
I've never seen 3 and 4.
Well, and from what I gather, so House 2 has nothing to do with House 1. They were really going for an anthology series. And it wasn't until number 4 that they're like, well, we can get Cat back, so let's do that.
The direct-to-DVD release.
Well, that's kind of what happens. I mean, come on, there's been, what, 7 Sharknado movies?
Something like that.
I mean, there have been 9 Fast and the Furious movies. So, why not have 4 House movies? And not a Hugh Laurie in sight?
No.
Now that I'd watch.
Yes.
House MD in house. So I don't know what else to bring out. One other bit of trivia that I discovered is that the guy who played Roger, and I cannot remember his name. I should remember his name, William Catt.
Yes.
William Catt, who played Roger, his actual son showed up for shooting one day. And it was a day that he was supposed to, like, get into a fight with one of the monsters and get sucked into the, you know, into something. And his kid had to be calmed down because because it was realistic enough on set that it just kind of overdid it.
Yeah. I mean, I think they made, like, 7 monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Were designed and fabricated for this. The war demon in the end measured about 18 feet tall,
which is big.
Yeah, it's a big, you know, mechanized puppet. Let's see. I think it took 15 people to operate.
Makes sense.
And had a fully working lower bowel system.
Well, you need it. You know, if you're going to be that big, I mean. At some point, you gotta. You just gotta.
Oh, yeah.
So, but, I mean, this is a see it for me. Even if you only watch it once at a random Halloween, it's a good movie. Well, it's a good enough movie.
It's good enough movie. It's middle 80s, you know.
It is.
Haunted house.
It's not as polished as Ghostbusters.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. There are far better 80s movies that fit into the supernatural kind of category. But this is the kind of thing you expect to see on late night television.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing that you should watch at late night television.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a great, I can't sleep, I don't have to get up in the morning, I'll put this on at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of movie where you want something that's just kind of a slow burn that has a few moments of levity and a few moments of jump scares, but for the most part is like, okay, this is one of those movies. It'll be fine.
Yeah. But, I mean, for the horror squeamish out there, it is not very scary. It is not very gruesome. Mm-hmm. It does touch on a couple of heavy subjects, such as, you know, the missing child and PTSD and stuff like that. But in terms of monsters and whatever, that's all pretty low key. It's there, it's present, it's part of the plot, but it's not as visceral as, say, a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying have your kid watch it. But
no.
but if your kid wanders through while you're watching it, it's far less traumatizing than the other 80s slasher and horror films out there.
Absolutely.
So,
it's a see it from you. I like it enough to watch it occasionally. It's one of those stupid movies that is just fun to put in every now and then.
Yeah.
Would you say this is a laundry folding movie or a where are we ranking this on our like 15 scale category?
No, this is a beer with a buddy. This is a beer with a buddy movie.
Beer with a buddy. There you go.
It's one of those things where you have a beer, you talk to each other through it for the most part, stopping when there's actual conversation, because there's a lot of times of just silence where it's only Roger on screen.
Yeah.
You know, doing stuff. And you just kind of talk through that and kind of side eye it, you know,
I'd agree with that,
you know, but it's a good beer with a buddy movie.
I'll agree with that. Yeah. So, I think it's your turn next.
I believe it is. Let's see. We'll be in November, won't we?
Mm-hmm.
Have to find a Thanksgiving movie. Maybe.
Well, while Chad is thinking about that, happy Halloween, everybody. See you next time.